welcome along to Channel 4's The Real Football Fan Show podcast with me, Robbie Lyle, the show that's made for the fans. On today's show, I'm going to be putting Arsenal legend Ian Wright on the spot. And I'm also joined in the studio by Sarah, an Everton fan from the Birdies Blue.
Yes, that's right. The Birdies Blue, the Blue Room, Toffee TV. But yeah, absolutely delighted to be here, mate.
And another bird in the building, but a different type of bird this time. From the Magpie Channel, we've got Matty, big Newcastle fan.
Buongiorno, big Newcastle fan, unfortunately. But we run the Magpie Channel fan TV for Newcastle United.
I know he's not too infused about Newcastle's activities at the moment, and we'll talk about that a little later on. But first of all, though, we've got to start off by talking about the real tragic events that took place at the weekend. It's been a really sad weekend for football in England. The owner of Leicester City Football Club, Vijay Sivatanaprabha, died in a helicopter crash. I'm sure you guys would have seen that, you know, after every game, there's always a helicopter that lands in the middle of the pitch and picks up the owner and his family and then takes them back to London. Sometimes he stays in London. Sometimes he then goes from there on to Thailand because, of course, he's from Thailand. But the plane, and I was watching the game at the weekend, and the game between Leicester City and West Ham, which was a good game, and tragically, after that, the plane, the helicopter, should I say, took off and crashed, and killing the owner, two members of staff, the pilot and a passenger. And it's really, really tragic. There's been an outpouring of grief, not just from Leicester fans, but from fans all over the country, all over the world. You know, you can see outside the ground, there's loads of flowers. There's football tops from practically every team in the Premier League. And it's just, it's so, so sad. He was an owner that, you know, pulled off the miracle in football. I think could go down as one of the greatest achievements ever in football, not just in British football, in football. Leicester at the start of that season were 5,000-1 to win the league. 5,000-1, and they won the league. When he first came to Leicester City, the first thing he did is when he took over is he got rid of all of their debt. Remember, Leicester was a club that was struggling. They were in lots and lots of debt. He got rid of all the debt. And he said at the time, he goes, I'm going to get this club in the next few years into the top three, top five. People were laughing at him.
Yeah.
And he pulled it off. They won the league. And, you know, the fans absolutely adored him up there. He'd done a lot of things for the community as well in Leicester. He donated loads and loads of money to charity. Of course, he was a billionaire. And as I said, you know, new training ground he did for Leicester. There was even lots of plans for more things going forward. And it's so, 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 so horrible, so, so tragic. I mean, Sarah, what did you think of it when you heard the news?
It's absolutely devastating. Like you, Robbie, I was watching the match on telly, saw the helicopter taking off, cut to the adverts, and then that's when all these tragic events unfolded before our eyes. And it's horrific, as you've just said there. This guy, you know, made the unimaginable happen, and not just for Leicester, but for all football fans. You know, almost every game now before an Everton game, we're sort of saying, you know, after a win or whatever, you never know what could happen in a few years. Look what Leicester did. And I think so, not just for them fans, but for every fan of football, he's given them that hope that you can achieve things that you never thought. And it's like you said, I think it probably is the greatest, not even just football, but one of the greatest sporting stories of all time. And not only did he do that and achieve that with Leicester, but maintain the fact that he was such a lovely man as well. You know, fans couldn't speak more highly of him, players. I went to Leicester just a couple of weeks ago for the away game, and the staff, the fans, everything we received as away fans, you don't always get that lovely kind of welcome. And I think Leicester, he's instilled this family vibe about the club. And yeah, it was such a tragic day for football, such a tragic loss. And, you know, thoughts and prayers are obviously with all of Leicester's fans and his family and so on. It's awful.
Just before we get to you, Matty, and get your opinion on it, we were at the game the other night where Tottenham Hotspurs took on Manchester City. And we were asking fans there what they thought about the tragedy, and this is what they had to say.
It's been an absolutely horrific footballing weekend, with what happened at Leicester, with, you know, Glenn Hoddle as well, who was my hero. I'm sure I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Glenn Hoddle. He's the one that made me love football. But what's happened at Leicester is just absolutely horrific. And how Leicester are going to be able to play in the next couple of weeks is beyond me. I'm sure they should, you know, abandon their matches for probably the next 4 weeks, I would think. Because, you know, how do you go out and play when, you know, the guy that owns the club has died in such a way? If it wasn't for him, you know, Leicester probably wouldn't have won the Premier League, you know, a few years ago. You know, he helped build the club, he put money into the club, you know, he was a phenomenal figure for them.
Well, shocked really, because I don't know much about him, not being a Leicester fan, but everything I've heard since, he was a really good guy, a really good chairman, and it's just a tragedy, isn't it, to happen to anyone. But yeah, it's just sad, really sad.
I saw a video the other day, and it was the sort of all the good things he did with the community. He donated money. He sort of gave loads of money to charity. He had his own charity and everything. And it was just, it's really, really sad in my opinion. He's a great, great loss and great miss.
Yeah, I just think, football aside, you know, it's great how everyone's kind of pulling together and, you know, sympathising with Leicester and sort of trying to stay strong for him. You know, it's good. It sort of brings everyone together, I suppose, but yeah.
The thing I thought about it, like, these are real people, like, we keep watching on the TV and stuff, but these are real people with real lives, and his death, like, affected many people, and what he created at Leicester was something special, like, winning the Premier League, no one expected it. So, yeah, I just hope my thoughts and prayers are with his family.
Big disappointment, because the guy's done so much for that club, and not just for the club, he's done it for, like, everybody else. So, like, he gives a lot to charity, as he says, like, he's donated money to, like, a university, a college, and stuff like that. Like, he's won the Premier League, so he's gone on a high. His legacy is gonna carry on, because up there or wherever he's gone, he still owns Leicester, and the thing is, the show still goes on. Do you know what I mean? But that's life.
So, Matty, you can hear there from those fans that, you know, it's touched fans all around the country. What were your thoughts on it?
I mean, obviously, it's a massive disaster, but he epitomised what every chairman should aspire to be. We all know the huge success of Leicester City from making a fairy tale a reality. You know, like Sarah said, to give other fans of other clubs, such as Newcastle, who aren't doing very well, you know, hope that one day they can beat the big boys, the big spenders, and get up the table. But not just the football side of things. You've got to look at the things he did for the community. He donated millions to the hospitals, schools. He had an honorary degree from the university. He invested a lot, not just into the club, but into the city. And that's why there was such a great connection between fans and the clubs, and maybe even people of Leicester who might not like football, but reap the benefits of what he's done there, you know, investing into the community. So it's a great thing. You know, a lot of owners for football these days come for take.
I mean, the owner of your club comes under a lot of criticism.
Exactly.
You know, there's other owners, even the owner of the club I support, Arsenal, criticise a lot for not turning up for games. This guy was always there, and you could see that he loved this football club. And foreign owners in particular get criticised that, you know, they're just not coming in, it's just a status thing, they're just here for the money. But this guy genuinely loved that football club, didn't he?
He did. Like you said, he flew halfway around the world to watch the game, because he was there every Saturday. He showed his dedication. I mean, like you say, foreign owners get grief. However, we've got an English owner who doesn't care an ounce. So it shows that he fell in love with Leicester, and Leicester fell in love with him, and so did the rest of football.
Yeah, and it was interesting that a fan there also mentioned about Glenn Hoddle. One of the Tottenham fans mentioned about Glenn Hoddle, who also... more tragic events at the weekend. I mean, it was just a horrible weekend. He suffered a heart attack, and he was on the set of the show that he does on BT Sport, was just doing some keepy-uppies, and then after that, suffered a heart attack. I think it was a sound engineer gave him CPR, which helped to save his life. And thankfully, Glenn seems to be responding to treatment, and you know, we're hoping and praying that he's going to get through this and he's going to be fine. But just a really horrible moment. And Glenn Hoddle, a guy that, you know, we've idolised over the years. As an Arsenal fan, and he was, of course, a Tottenham legend. He's one player at Tottenham you could never hate on because he's just such a nice guy. He was such a brilliant, skillful player as well. And, yeah, it's really, really sad what's happened to him. And also, as well, at the weekend, a Brighton fan passed away at a game. So it puts a lot of things into perspective. Of course, we love this game. Of course, we love football. But when these sort of things happen, the football community really pulls together, don't they, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's it. You know, we can all have a whinge and get frustrated and angry when results don't necessarily go our way. But it does massively put things into context. You know, a Brighton fan's gone to the game and really sadly lost his life there. You've had Glenn Hoddle, fantastic footballer. Glad to hear that he's, you know, responding well. Hopefully he makes a speedy recovery. And then, of course, your Leicester chairman as well, dying, and four other people in a tragic crash. And you just think, wow, you know, it is. I'm one of the ones who gets angry when people say it's just a game because it means so much. But when things like that happen, you kind of just go, you know what? It's not the be and end all. There's worse things that happen. And as I say, just a really sad day for football. And I think one that people will remember for a long time for sad reasons. It was a bit of a freak of nature, and, you know, was glad to see the end of that day, to be honest. Really sad.
Yeah, really tragic events. I want to send out our condolences from everybody here at the Real Football Fan Show to all the families that have been affected by this tragedy, all the Leicester City fans. It's just been a horrible weekend for football, and like Sarah said, really puts things into perspective. Let's now, though, talk about some of those weekend's games. And Sarah, you're here. Matty, you're here. Matty, I'm going to begin with you. Newcastle, it was a big game for you guys against Southampton. Southampton have been struggling as well. Mark Hughes under a lot of pressure. So maybe you would have looked on this game and said, this is the chance for Newcastle to get their first win of the season, their first 3 points of the season, to get going, to get motoring. Another draw. 0-0 draw. 1 point. Newcastle now only on 3 points this season. In the bottom three. Are you guys going to get relegated this season? I mean, you're in danger of that now, aren't you?
We're massively in danger of it now because Southampton was a must-win game, in my opinion, to make sure we don't get cut adrift. Like you see there in Bar of the South, they're sitting in 16th. It was a chance to make up ground on them, which we didn't do the previous week at home at Brighton. It's teams like that. If you want to stay in the Premier League, you've got to be beating the likes of Brighton and Hove Albion at home. And we went to Southampton and we struggled to have a shot on target. Zero shots on target. But you've got to look at Southampton's bench costs more than Newcastle's starting 11. Mm. It says that we sold two strikers in the summer and we got one in on loan from a relegated side in West Brom. And they're wondering where the problems lie.
But all the fans up there are still behind Rafa Benitez, aren't they?
It's dropping. The percentages are certainly dropping. It's, I would say, about 70-80% are still behind him. Rafa can't be, you know, benign to criticism. No one can. And his negative tactics have been worrying and the substitutions have been strange this season. But at the end of the day, we are very lucky to have Rafa Benitez as our manager, a Champions League
It was Rafa Benitez who said, let's get rid of Mitrovic, right? Yeah. Who's the guy that, you know, has gone to Fulham, mm-hmm. has been scoring goals, you know. These are his decisions that he's made. Oh, we know about the limited budget and that, but these are his decisions. And this is what it's costing Newcastle now, because basically you don't have a goal scorer. He got rid of Dwight Gayle as well.
Yeah, again, strange, but the thing is...
No, but you're saying strange. Surely he's got to start taking some of the blame. I know Mike Ashley, the owner, is getting a lot of blame because they're saying that he's not spending money and that. But Rafa's given this job, right, to turn things around. And... why sell or get rid of your two strikers? And then now he's moaning, you know, he brought in Rondon from West Bromwich Albion. Come on, let's have it right. He's hardly a prolific striker, is he? So
he's moaning because he's not getting his replacements, does he? He's getting third, fourth, fifth choice down his list. He's given Lee Charnley, the chief executive, a list of players he's getting. He's not getting first, second. He's not getting third choice. So he's getting fourth, fifth, because Mike Ashley's given him no budget, so he's having to look around and get these B&M bargains. You know, he's shopping around.
But what about
places.
The guys that he had there that he got rid of? That's what I'm saying. He got rid of those guys. The strikers. The one I saw when Newcastle, I went there when Arsenal played Newcastle. You looked toothless up front, and I was just like, Mitrovic is that sort of player that would give defences and was doing it, giving defences a lot of problems. Why couldn't he have ironed out his differences with Mitrovic and kept him at the club?
Well, I think we know Rafa's a stubborn man. I mean, there was definitely a personal feud going on between them. He couldn't trust him. He got sent off in his early days. He's a liability, Mitrovic, he is. And he didn't fit into the Rafa's style of play, so that was it, really.
A goal-scoring liability. Sarah, Everton.
Yes.
At Manchester United. You never seem to beat Man United there, do you? And you got beaten again 2-1. Everton, bit of a strange team this season. One week they're brilliant, then the next week they're useless. I mean, is that an accurate description?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think we were useless on Sunday, but what I will say is that United were definitely there for the taking. I think Everton still have this negative mentality that comes from years of not being able to get results at the, you know, the bigger grounds, the top six away games. We always seem to lose or at best get a point. And you know, we didn't seem to go there all guns blazing. I think Everton, this team we've got Richarlison, we've got Bernard, we've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, we've got Theo Walcott.
We spent a lot of money.
And when you look at it on paper, we've got a brilliant side. But I just think, yeah, we were holding back. We weren't really going for it. Man United were there to be had a go at. I don't think they're anything particularly special. And can we just take a moment to talk about that Pogba penalty?
Oh my word.
I wanted to throw up watching that. I thought even if I was a United, if an Everton player did that, I think you deserve to miss this, mate.
I flew to Benidorm and came back by the time he took that penalty.
Oh my God. Wasn't it awful? It was shocking. I thought you deserved to have this saved, and Pickford was really unlucky that he, you know, he did save it and he got the rebound, because we'd have made him look a bit of a plum, to be honest. Well, I think he did that anyway. But again, Martial, I don't know what the hell that was. Never a penalty in a million years. Garnaget does really well to win the ball. John Moss, as soon as I saw that we had him, I thought all the Evertonians were saying, they've already got a penalty or we've got someone sent off here, because John Moss, that's what he does. He shouldn't be an official. Don't think he can keep up with play. Umar Nias, I'm going off on a tangent here, I do apologise. Umar Nias last season got banned retrospectively for a dive against Crystal Palace, which resulted in us getting a penalty. Now, the FA have reviewed Martial's and decided that that's not, you know, that wasn't a mimicking of a foul or whatever to try and get another, you know, a result or whatever, which he did. So it's, again, just the FA do favour these teams.
And some of these players do go down easily. We saw it, I thought, at the Arsenal game at the week, Arsenal versus Crystal Palace. Mm. Wilfried Zaha, another guy that, you know, seems to go down like a swan.
It's ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
At the slightest of touches. Did another brilliant one, but you know, but there's a lot of people out there saying it was a penalty because it was contact. I mean,
but the way he throws himself, and it gets to me as well, because you know, you've got Roy Hodgson and everyone making a big kerfuffle about it's not fair, Zaha's getting kicked all over the place and this, that and the other, and you see that. I mean, he got penalty the week before against Everton, and again, I think it was really soft. Yeah. It was the tiniest bit of contact and he goes down as if he's been shot in the leg, and you just start to think, you know, it's simulation. It is, he's a big lad. You just think, come on, play the game, you're a good footballer, you shouldn't have to cheat. And ultimately, I think He did cheat, and you know, Arsenal were very unfortunate not to get the win in the end.
Going back to you two guys, right? Now, Newcastle and Everton, right? These are two massive clubs. Would you say, you know, that you're big clubs? Because Newcastle, every week, 50,000 plus fans.
Yeah.
Every week. Everton, every week, 40,000. Brilliant. Both of your teams, brilliant travelling support. Back in the day, Everton were winning titles. Are you guys ever going to get back to the top? I'm going to start with you, Matty.
If Mike Ashley's still there, then absolutely not. If he leaves, and there's an owner that comes in that matches the fans' ambitions, Rafa's ambitions, we can go back to the Leicester City thing. It can be done. You don't need all of the money. You just need clever money.
Why do you think Mike Ashley, the owner of the club, is just holding on to it and just not letting go?
It's like he likes being the pantomime villain, isn't it? But he likes the free billboards advertising across the world. That's what he likes.
You guys don't like the owner up there. You don't like him at all. But it just doesn't seem like he's going anytime soon, does it?
I mean, well, there was talks of Peter Kenyon, the ex-Chelsea executive there, coming in a few weeks ago. But it's all just seems to be a smokescreen. We've seen it last year with Amanda Staveley over the new year. It won't go because Mike Ashley's asking for way too much. He values Newcastle at $400 million. He bought it for $180 million, and it's been relegated twice. Where on earth he gets that figure from? Just because he knows no one will touch it. So is a constant money-making machine, businessman of the year.
Sarah, yes. Everton. Are Everton going to get back there? They've spent a lot of money, you know, in the summer. They've got some really good players there. Gylfi Sigurdsson, Pickford. You know, these are players that will be getting into any of the teams in the top four.
Yeah.
Why are Everton not clicking? And why are Everton, you know, or can you see Everton getting back into the top four?
Yeah, I absolutely can. Not this season, of course, but I think in the coming years, you know, you look, Pickford just signed a new six-year deal, which is huge and sets, you know, the tone for, you know, other players that are coming in or that we already have at the team. We just signed Luca Dean. We signed Gomez from Barcelona or got him on loan. We've got Yerry Mina from Barcelona, Richarlison, Bernard. When you look at our team, we've got a great team. And I think with the stadium, Everton just spoke more about Bramley Moore. We've now got a timeline on when that's going to happen. They're hoping for us to be in the stadium for 2022. This is going to be huge, you know, for the city of Liverpool, for football. We've got the money now, and there's talk of Usmanov coming in. I don't, you know, that's very, I think it'll happen. He's Mashiri's mate. I think then we've got more money. We've got the stadium on the horizon. Marco Silva wants to play that fast-paced, attacking, high-pressing football. And when it comes off, we look a really good side. But it's going to take a little while. I mean, this is only, Marco Silva's only managed Everton in the league for 10 games. So I think we need to give him a little bit of time. I think this season will finish similar to where we did last season. But certainly in a few years' time, I think that's where we should be. And I think that's where we will be.
Now, you mentioned stadiums. And as you said, you're still waiting on your stadium. You've been planning it for God knows how long. and then there's another team, Tottenham Hotspur, who were supposed to move into their stadium at the start of the season, still haven't moved in, still playing their games at Wembley. There was an announcement that the club put out last week that now they're not going to be moving into the new stadium at White Hart Lane till at least the end of this year. And then there was the game on Monday night where Tottenham Hotspur played Manchester City, and there'd been a American football game there the day before, and all the markings were still on the pitch, and it looked horrendous. I mean, when are they going to finish this ground? What we did, we went out and we asked fans at that game, Tottenham Hotspur fans, what they thought about this further delay of them moving into their new stadium.
I have to be honest, I live in Northwest London. It's far more convenient for me to come here than it is to go to Tottenham. So I'm happy. I mean, I really am, because I get a bus outside my house. I'm here in I'm here in 15 minutes. This is perfect. Stay here forever. This should be our home ground forever, I'd say. I think they've made this their home. I mean, Spurs have got a really, really good record at Wembley. Oh, you know, a couple of years ago when they had their matches here, results weren't great. But once it became established that we were playing here every other week as part of our, you know, home ground, then the results have been good.
Are you upset that you're not at White Hart Lane yet?
Yes, and I don't understand why. And I know it's a problem with the safety, but it's a pity. The stadium is finished, everything is ready, but we're still playing here. This is another stadium, they're not used to this. So the sooner, the faster they go to White Hart Lane, the better.
Well, I'm not really upset with the club, it's just a situation, and they need to make sure the stadium's ready, and that's how. I'm frustrated more than anything, I just want to get home, basically. We went and had a look in August, and it still looked like a building site. So we struggled to see how they're going to get it done by September then. So I think they were being over-optimistic in the first place.
For me, I would rather start halfway through the season with at our new stadium. I'd rather, like, say, instead of going hot, like mid sort of gap, I'd rather, like, say, start fresh 1st of January. Sort of, we've got the transfer window ahead of us. We've got a new start. Like, hopefully, like, from, like, halfway, we could, like, lift it and bring it back and everything.
Everyone's going to be disappointed, but it's going to be something to be looking forward to in the new year anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, it's a beautiful stadium. To build a new stadium does take up to 2 years. So we did it straight after the game, you know what I mean? So at the end of the day, like, it's going to be good. It's a beautiful stadium at the minute, and we're going to have NFL there. So we can't rush. And this time of year, you ain't going to get contractors in to finish the stadium. So it's one of them, so... When it's ready, it's ready. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, he should have just spent. He needs to spend in January. The disappointment is he didn't spend because of the stadium, and then because And there, the manager's frustrated more than anything, and the players are getting frustrated as well. They don't want to be here. They want to be at their own ground at the end of the day. You don't want to be playing, like, as a temp. You know, this is like a temporary stadium, but it's like, it's not home, but it's just a stadium we play under.
So you heard it there. I was laughing at that fan who said he lives near Wembley anyway, so that's all right. But most of those fans don't live near Wembley. And what did you make of that the other night, Matt? That pitch.
That was a good touchdown by Morris.
I mean, it was a horrendous pitch, and it was embarrassing to see all the markings, you know, from the NFL game on the pitch, you know, and all the jokes about touchdown and all the things being tweeted out and stuff like that. I mean, it must be so embarrassing for Tottenham Hotspurs. And, you know, you can't blame the owners of Wembley because they had that NFL game booked in ages ago.
Yeah.
It's Spurs' fault because they should be in their new stadium.
I mean, you couldn't believe it when you seen the images, how scruffy. It was worse than a Sunday league pitch with all the NFL logos all over it. You just thought, how have they let this happen? But to be fair, it was a year in advance that NFL game was booked. So again, it falls at Tottenham's planning for the stadium. It's obviously, it's their problem, it's their fault. Could it have been moved, but obviously it was booked in for TV. You know, that's what it's all about these days. So there's nothing they could do really last minute, but it was a disgrace to stay at that.
There's people been saying, other fans have been saying that they feel that Tottenham should have been docked points this season for not moving into their new stadium on time. How do you feel on that?
I think they've been let away massively, to be honest. I mean, how can't you just get something down to a timescale? Fair enough, maybe a month or so, but now you're looking at 4 or 5 months' time. Are they even going to be moved in there by January? They may as well just wait until next season.
Well, there was that guy who said that in where we was talking to him. He said that he'd rather just move in next year because, again, it's going to be a bit of an anti-climax moving in halfway through, Sarah. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is totally bizarre, and I think Spurs have been very fortunate not to suffer any real repercussions. They've been allowed to kind of do what they want, and the state of that pitch yesterday was an absolute embarrassment, as you said. It wasn't fit to be played on. It's like I was saying to you before as well, off air, we were kind of saying that the fact Tottenham have had Wembley for so long takes away that little bit of magic and mystique about it as well. And I don't think it's fair to the rest of the footballing world. You know, it's not Wembley Stadium now, it's kind of Spurs' little makeshift ground, and I don't think it's fair, and I think they've gotten away with it. Let's see if they ever do move into Whitehall Lane, move back in. Let's see if it ever gets done.
Have you been there, Matty, to Wembley?
I had to go last year because, let's be honest, we're not going to get to a cup final anytime soon.
That's the bonus of it, then, isn't it? That's the bonus, right? If you don't get to a cup final, you get to go to the ground.
I thought we'll have a nice little trip to Wembley and pretend that we're in the FA Cup final. So we went there. The end of last year, I think we got beat 1-0. I think we played really well, actually, but we missed a handful of chances. But we had to go there and check out the stadium. And to be fair, like, it does give you a chance to see it, but you're right. I mean, if Newcastle did pull off a miracle, managed to get there in a cup competition, it takes away that, the magic, the essence of it all a bit, since you've already been for a Premier League game.
You been there, Sarah?
Yes, last season under Big Sam Allardyce, 4-0, we lost. So that was a really fun trip back to Liverpool. But no, you know, you kind of walk out and you go, yeah, oh, it's Wembley. But it's, yeah, I think it's a load of rubbish, to be honest, that they've been allowed there for that long. And let's see what happens. I can't see it being soon. I think it could well be, you know, looking at January, February. We'll have to wait and see.
All right, a quick run through of some of the other results from last weekend. Brighton beating Wolves 1-0. That Wolves, sort of, everybody was bigging them up a few weeks ago. That's two defeats in a row for them. Fulham really struggling now, beating 3-0 at home by Bournemouth. Bournemouth are flying at the moment, by the way. They're playing really well. Here's one for you, Sarah. Liverpool 4, Cardiff 1.
Do you know,
I'm sure you was watching.
Do you know what was bizarre about that? I was actually in a Liverpool pub with Reds watching that. It's a long story, I won't go into it, but it was one of the worst weekends of my life, mate.
Watford 3, Huddersfield 0. Watford back on track. Leicester 1, West Ham 1. We spoke about that. Burnley losing 4-0 at home to Chelsea. Chelsea, another team, kind of going under the radar a bit, but they're definitely going to be there for a challenge for the league. Palace 2, Arsenal 2, which we already spoke about. And, of course, the game, as I said, on Monday night, Manchester City beating Tottenham Hotspur by 1-0. Right at the end of that game, Lamela had a chance. I'm telling you, I could have scored that.
Mm-hmm.
I could, with my limited football ability, I could have scored that chance that Lamela had at the end, and that cost Tottenham and a big win for Manchester City. Who's going to win the title, do you think, this year?
City.
You going City?
I'm going to go Chelsea, me, you know.
Interesting one.
I fancy Chelsea. Honestly, Sorry's doing a fantastic job there, and Hazard, for me, is the best player in the world at the moment. And I fancy them to put all the eggs in one basket. You know how much Pep wants to try and win everything, try and win the treble, the quad and everything. So I fancy Chelsea.
Still no mention of Arsenal. Nobody ever mentions Arsenal.
You know what? Arsenal are doing very, very well. Up until they were very unfortunate not to win against Palace. And I think, although Palace did play pretty well, but that was 11 wins on the trot. And some of the football you guys are playing now, it's reminiscent of old Arsenal. And I think Unai Emery's doing a really good job. And
next
you guys could creep up.
Next year, maybe once the other players like Torreira growing up a bit more Premier League experience, then you could really push on.
Talking of Arsenal, look at this brilliant segue into this. I caught up with Ian Wright and got him on the spot for a brilliant interview. Let's hear from Ian Wright right now. We've got the legend Ian Wright here. Proper legend.
Yeah? Thanks, Rob. I love your intros, man.
Right, now listen, we got our show, The Real Football Fan Show, which is on Channel 4. And you know, it's all about the fans in that show. And I know that you're really a player, that a real sort of fans player. Mm-hmm. Even fans that don't like you over the years, they like it. They do. You're probably that sort of player that if you went to a fan and said, secretly, do you like him? They say, yeah, we like him. We hate playing it, but we like him. But going back to your playing days, where was the place you used to really love going and winding up fans?
Spurs, man. Well, I only lost against Spurs, I think, once. I think the Romanian fella scored the goal over at White Hart Lane. You know what I mean? That's the only time. But going to White Hart Lane, because, you know, it was brilliant because the build-up started from the season. The first thing you'd look at on the team sheet, on the fixture list, yeah. Rob, is when are we playing Spurs, whether it's at home or there. And I used to love playing at White Hart Lane because...
You used to deliberately wind them up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you go and pick the ball up at, with a throw on and you can see them doing their stuff, especially if I've scored in the last minute or something and then the game's winding down. You look at them and then they're slaughtering you. But I love it. But even now, Spurs fans now, they say, oh, I hated you used to wind me up so much. And I used to love doing it because I genuinely didn't want to lose. And it was a case of the fans. It meant so much to the fans. Don't lose against the Spuds. Don't lose against the Spuds, whatever you do. I remember when I first came, like I said, with Rocky, stayed up to 5 o'clock in the morning. Rocky's, he must have done 2 hours on not losing to Spurs. So you know that was the place where, you know what I mean, I enjoyed going because I got a lot of joy there.
Was it the most hostile place you went to? What's the most...
Millwall was the most hostile.
That's the most hostile ground you went to?
In England, Millwall was horrible because they knew I came from the area. They knew that I grew up watching Millwall. And when I went there, they really made me know how disappointed they were in me. But it could be quite hostile. But the fact is that I used to watch there when I was a kid, so I wasn't intimidated by it. Yeah. But it was a hostile place to be.
Yeah. Favorite fans, right? Apart from the obvious Arsenal fans, who are your favorite other fans? That you know, fans that you just say, oh, I really like how those fans are.
You know, I have to mention Leeds United fans. Because, like I said, I used to get a lot of stick at Leeds in the early days. And then as it went by, they sorted themselves out and they were brilliant. They always gave me a good reception. Same thing with Derby. Derby County fans, really respectful and really nice. But I think that if I was going to put my finger on it, it would be the Leeds fans. I remember scoring a nice goal against them as well. And I remember them giving me a round of applause and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And I got a lot of letters from Leeds fans. And I think that towards the end, like I'd say from about 95s to when I stopped, that kind of time, Leeds fans are really nice to me, really nice. And I think that they're the first ones that come out when I think of fans who were respectful. And I've got to say, even the Chelsea fan, I remember going playing against Chelsea and thinking, I'd have absolute rocks with Chelsea fans when I go and get the throw on or go into the corner or go and get the ball for something or the game would go dead and they're giving you stick and I give them stick back and afterwards Chelsea fans would clap you or they'd say fair play to you.
Although I love that story you told me about when Chelsea beat Arsenal 6-0 and you was doing commentary there.
Oh man, remember they beat us 6-0, it was 4-0 at half time I'm not sure if I could do it on here because I can't do this. I can't do the finger signs. But it was 4-0 yeah. After time, and they were singing "Righty, righty, what's the score?" And I gave them, I showed them the four fingers. How you'd expect four fingers to go to a Chelsea fan, but even that, I gave them the, I told them it was 4-0 in the way I did, and even that, they laughed and clapped me off. Mm. So I think that obviously once I stopped playing, the fans gave me a lot more respect. But like I say, while I was playing, I got a lot of respect from Leeds fans, and I really appreciated that.
The legend there that is Ian Wright, I love that guy. I mean, Sarah, he's that football player that all fans like, isn't he?
Absolutely. He's just always got a lovely smile on his face. He speaks passionately as a fan, as you know, which is what we all are. And I love to see that. He's very opinionated, which I also love, and a very likeable fella. So, yeah, great interview as well.
You could have do with a striker like him, oh, you know, a modern-day Ian Wright at Newcastle right now, couldn't you?
If only, yeah. I mean, I went and seen a Q&A actually with Shearer and Wright before the World Cup at St. James Park. And I have to say, he's an absolute gent. Like, he's a really humble guy, really funny guy. Really great person to be around, and what a player he was. Undervalued for a bit at the start of his career, coming from Palace, and unlucky to not feature in the England side as much as he should have done because of how many great strikers there was around at
Shearer,
that time.
Shearer, of course, kept him out for a lot of the time.
Yeah, battling between each other all the time. Like, right, he was saying he was always praying for Shearer to be injured so he'd get a chance in an England shirt, and he would have if it wasn't for the likes of Shearer and Sheringham and Ferdinand. You know, there's loads there at that time, but brilliant guy and a brilliant player.
Listen, it's time to get into Challenge Robbie. Of course, this is where we pick out three games from the upcoming games and we predict the scores. Just before we get into it, I've got to tell you about the scores from last week's show. Oh, my God. It worked good. It worked good, right? Of course, we had Toby on, the Tottenham fan, Louis, Chelsea fan, and, of course, myself. I got 2 points. I came last. On my own show, I come last.
Oh, nice.
Louis, the Chelsea fan, comes second with 3 points. And the winner, imagine this, on my show, a Tottenham fan comes onto my show and wins it. Toby got 5 points. Well done to Toby. But we got you guys on this week, and we're going to take a look at three games. The rules are this. If you get the exact result right, you get 3 points. If you get the outcome right, you get 1 point. And nil pois if you get it completely wrong, just like how we do it on the TV show, all right? The first game we're going to go to is your one, Sarah.
Yes.
Everton versus Brighton.
It's a tricky one because a team like Brighton is going to come to Everton and put, you know, 10 men behind the ball, and it's going to be tough. They're going to be tough to break down. But I think we've got enough quality there. We're at home. If the supporters get going, I'd also like to see Richarlison put back onto the left-hand side because he's been ineffective through the middle. But I'm going for an Everton win, and I think we'll win 2-0, clean sheet as well.
2-0. Matty, what do you think in this game?
I fancy Everton to make it 2-0. Like Sarah summed it up perfectly. I think Brighton will go there like they did against us. They didn't get in our half after they scored their goal.
You guys had, was it, 27 shots?
27 shots, wow. Man.
In that game.
I think Brighton
and no
had
goal.
One, which from a corner, that shouldn't have been a foul on the build-up, but that's football and it's full of ifs and buts. But I think Everton will go there, and with the quality up front, they'll end up getting up 1 or 2. They'll break them down. There's only so long, Brighton.
Okay, listen, I think, you know what? Brighton, they're a very well-organised team, and they've got Glenn Murray up front. And which we go back to the Newcastle thing. He's not no mega expensive striker, but he bangs in goals, doesn't he? So I fancy Brighton to score, but I do think Everton will win the game. I'm going to go for 2-1.
I was going to say me and you were going to fall out then, Robbie.
Yeah, I was going to say Everton 3, Brighton 4, and then I looked at your face and went, no. The next game we're looking at is Newcastle versus Watford. Matty, your boys up against Watford. At the start of the season, you would have looked on this game and said, yeah, home win, 3 points all day long.
Yeah.
However, Watford have been playing really, really well this season. I remember when they come to the Emirates, they were excellent that day. Very unfortunate to leave with a defeat in that game. Beat Huddersfield last week 3-0. Went away to Wolves, who have been on fire. Beat them. Mm. Any chance in this game?
Nah.
No.
honestly, Newcastle fans are going to hate me and unsubscribe to my channel, but I'm just so pessimistic at the minute because I was at the Brighton game and they had nothing. However, Watford have got a lot. They've got Pierce in the wings and Pereira and Delafield. They've got Dini up front. They're a handful of a team, and the manager there's got them playing some really good stuff. And at the minute, you know, they're a top six, top seven side. I just don't think we've got enough.
If you haven't got enough to beat teams like Watford,
we didn't have enough to beat teams like Brighton.
And Brighton, you're going to go down if you don't start winning some of these games.
Absolutely. That's why we're 19th in the table, Robbie. We've got to hope that we can keep it close. That's why I think Rafa made it difficult for it to beat against Southampton, pick up a point, try not get cut adrift, and hope that in January the owner sees some sense and invests. But at the minute, you look at Watford starting 11 against our starting 11, and you think, well, Watford will just pull through. Like I say, what they've got going forward, I think they'll really hurt us. Because the defence, Rafa keeps it organised, but our fullbacks, Yedlin and Dummett, just aren't good defensively. And like I say, the form that Pereira's in, I just fancy a couple of goals for Watford, honestly.
You want to give him a cuddle, don't you?
I just reminds me, like, it's a different sort of thing, but last season under Allardyce, and you fall out of love with football a little bit when you see your club in such a mess. But I've got to say, I don't think Watford are going to win. I'm going to go for 1-1. I'm tempted even to go for a Newcastle win, but I want to say 1-1. And the reason for that is Watford are playing very good football. They're on a phenomenal run, but it was only a couple of weeks ago they lost 4-0 to Bournemouth. I think that, you know, you've got to look at Newcastle of absolutely needing something out of this game. Maybe don't have quite enough to get past Watford and get the win. But, you know, if you score first, I think I'm going to go 1-1.
I'm going 3-1 Watford.
3-1 Watford. Oh.
Oh, Matty, mate. Sorry, Fireman Sam's coming.
I'm
going to
give you that cuddle. Come here, man.
I'm going to beat 3-0. I told Watford we did all right last year. Just everything at the club at the minute, man. It's just.
Yeah, all right. Well, my predictions on it. Matty, I want to help you out here, man, but I can't, man. Watford are a good team. Sorry. 2-0. 2-0 Watford.
Sorry, Matt.
Listen, you got hope. You saw my predictions from last week. I got nearly everything wrong. So
he's going to win now.
Final game, Arsenal versus Liverpool. The biggest game of the weekend, you've got to say. Big battle at the top of the table. Liverpool unbeaten. Arsenal been on this excellent unbeaten run. That's now 12 games unbeaten for them as well. Who's going to come out on top in this one?
Nobody's going to come out on top, and it's going to be a high-scoring draw. Liverpool have got everything going forward, caused Arsenal's defence problems, but if Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ozil as well has been playing well recently, the likes of those are on form, then it should be a really good game. High-scoring draw for me.
High-scoring draw, what are you going for?
3-3.
That's what it was last season. How, I don't know, because we were getting absolutely destroyed by Liverpool, but we did manage to peg it back to 3-3. What about you, Sarah?
I think, you know, like Matty said, I can see it being a high-scoring game. I think both teams are exceptionally good going forward. But yeah, Arsenal can be a bit rocky at the back. Liverpool seem to have tightened up a bit with Van Dijk and Gomez playing so well as well. But with Arsenal being at home as well, having that frustrating late penalty against Palace, you know, kind of ending that winning run, I think you'll be keen to come back and get the 3 points. And obviously, I'm a massive, massive blue, so I'm going with Arsenal, mate, all day. All day, I'm going to go 3-2 to Arsenal.
3-2 to Arsenal. Thank you very much. I hope you're right, man.
So do I, mate.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Liverpool are a good team, man. They're very good. I think it's going to be a draw as well. I can see this being 2-2. I'd love Arsenal to win, obviously, but Liverpool, I think they are the real deal this season. I do think that they are a team that are going to be challenging to win the league. I don't think Arsenal are there yet. I think Arsenal are a team that can get into the top four, but they're not, you know, I have to admit it, they're not as good as Liverpool. So you got to say, yeah, I'll go for a draw in this game. Some great games to look forward to this weekend.
Very much so. I'm looking forward to that, particularly the Arsenal-Liverpool game. I think, obviously, I'm going to be supporting Arsenal on the day, but it should just be a great game to watch. And, you know, the other thing is Liverpool's winning. You know, they haven't lost. That has to come. I'm a big believer in the law of averages. That said, we haven't won a trophy since 95. However, I do think they've got to get beat sooner or later. Arsenal away is going to be tough for them.
I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts before we go. What do you think with the Leicester game? Because Leicester, I think they got Cardiff at the weekend. And do you think that game should be postponed?
I think probably it should be, yeah. I mean, I don't know how long you would kind of postpone these games for. I know their women's team didn't play on the weekend. I think this one should be postponed. It's such a huge tragedy that's occurred, everyone's going to be, the players are going to be upset, the fans are going to be upset. I don't see how you can put in a proper performance so soon after such a big tragedy like that. So I would have it postponed.
As a fan, Matty, if you was a Leicester fan, would you want this game to be played right now?
I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon because of the way that it happened, the event in which took place. It's just too, like we said, it's put things into perspective. It's not entirely important. We can wait at least a week for the match to be played. Things need to, you know, settle down and get back in the swing of things. I mean, you've seen the Leicester players with the owner's family there at the King Power Stadium, you know, Liam Reeves. It's about respect at the minute. And I think we've got to give it a bit of time before we rush straight back into another game, really.
So we've come to the end of the show today. I want to thank my very special guest, Sarah. Thank you very much for coming on. You've been brilliant.
Absolute pleasure as always, mate.
Got to get you on a fan battle soon again.
Oh, I'd love to. Bring it on.
Yeah, line up against a United fan this time.
I'll bring it, especially after the weekend. I'm ready.
As long as it's not against me, like, because I wouldn't fancy me chances.
No, Matty, we're laying off you for now. Matty, but you've been a great sport. Thanks for coming on
my
today
pleasure,
as well.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's been a brilliant show. Show dedicated today to all the fans of Leicester City Football Club and to all the staff there as well. And to, you know, once again, it's been such a sad week in football. You've been listening to Channel 4's The Real Football Fan Show podcast. Make sure that you subscribe, rate us and review us. It's very, very important to do that, so please do it. And don't forget that you can watch all the Real Football Fan shows on All Four if you want to catch up and see that fan battle with Sarah where Everton took on Liverpool. That's the place to see it. Made for the fans.